What do you think about that?
I think that's probably on where we ought to be. Yeah, so we don't, maybe we ought to just,
Okay, well, having said that,
288, we have, with Bill Linden here on 288.
They just went to fetch him some.
Well, let me say this, then.
Go ahead.
I'd rather not have the entire concept go down the drain. I think tapping into large homestead exemptions is worthwhile. So if there's no support for that, I'll support the amendment in order to get the bill out.
Thank you.
I think anything's better than nothing, is basically what I'm saying.
Senator Hill, you gonna move the bill?
Yes, I move the amendments to
Senate Bill 5
592.
Yes. Their dash 4 amendments, as with a hand, as you've seen it hand engrossed here. Are there objections to those amendments? Hearing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 592 as amended to the floor for due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Hill moves Senate Bill 592 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Call the roll, please.
Brockman?
Aye.
Brinsky?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye, motion carried. Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, 288. 288. Come on up. We have amendments.
Yes,
Senator Brinsky, are you party to this?
You want me to jump out there?
Well, no, you can talk from where you are.
Madam Chair, I appreciate that. Little did I know when I first said we needed discretionary or mandatory attorney fees on this that it would turn out to be the technical drafting coup of the century to get that in. Hence, all the problems that we have had, and I want to applaud our Administrator Catherine as well as Bill Linden for their continued and diligent efforts on this. But we have come up with something that I think will finally work. I would like to read it, however, into the testimony. A little something for some legislative history on this so that the courts will have some idea of what we mean by it. So maybe I should go down there.
Thank you. Okay. That would be fine.
Also, I'd like to call the committee's attention to the fact that we've already adopted a dash 1 and a dash 3 amendment. The one that's in front of you now would be a substitution for those amendments and is complete unto itself.
Yes, I think for purposes, Senator Hill moves that we delete all the amendments were made in previous hearings, and we start with Senate Bill 288 in its original form, and then proceed on. Are there objections to that? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Grinsky.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm State Senator Ron Grinsky from Senate District 25. I hope you all have a copy of Senate Bill 288-5 amendments. I'm submitting this statement for the record to clarify the intent of this committee regarding 1989 Senate Bill 288 relating to mandamus proceedings. After discussing the bill with State Court Administrator, I am recommending that the committee adopt the amendments to SB 288 marked SB 288-5 LC 1028 from Legislative Counsel's Office. These amendments would make the award of attorney fees and disbursements in mandamus actions discretionary with the court. I am making this recommendation, however, with the clear understanding that the State Court Administrator will advise the Judicial Conference that this committee expects courts to use this authority to award attorney fees in appropriate cases. Mandamus will become a more effective tool if parties not only expect to lose the mandamus, but also expect to pay attorney fees for the party having to fight the mandamus. The reasons for making the attorney fees discretionary are requirements that we didn't feel it would be appropriate for public bodies or judges to be required to pay attorney fees. They are frequently parties to a mandamus action. However, there are other cases where it would be appropriate, where they should be awarded. And although they needed to be discretionary, we encourage and hope that the courts will use that authority to make the prevailing party whole.
Thank you. Other questions? Bill Linden, you want to come up? Senator Springer?
I've got a question for Mr. Linden. If he'd like to respond first before I raise my question, that's fine.
Well, Madam Chair, for the record, Bill Linden, State Court Administrator. The Dash 5 amendments do, as Senator Grinsky noted, make award of the attorney's fees discretionary. That's our preference. And I have no problem with the statement Senator Grinsky made in the record about making sure that trial courts and the Supreme Court are aware that the intent was that these attorney's fees be awarded when appropriate. The problem in the past has been there's been no authority whatsoever to award attorney fees in these cases, and now that authority will be in law, and I believe the courts will use that authority in the appropriate cases to award the fees in these mandamus proceedings.
Any other comments? Senator Springer?
Bill, I don't pretend to be an expert in this area, but as I understand the bill, what it would basically do is permit an otherwise adverse party basically to become the attorney for the judge or to represent the judge's interest. And I'll just be real straightforward with you. I am a little uncomfortable with a judge and one of the parties being so closely identified in their interests, or even more closely identified in their interests, to the point that the attorney becomes almost the alter ego counsel. In terms of just, you know, whether it's for the plaintiff or the defendant, the petitioner, the respondent, can you say anything that's going to make me feel more comfortable about that in terms of whether or not the judicial department or the particular judge almost assumes an interest coincidental with that of one of the parties in a matter before the court?
Madam Chair, Senator Springer, in any mandamus proceeding where there is any kind of a separate interest of the judiciary, we do not ask the otherwise real party in interest to defend that interest. We will use the Attorney General's office or outside counsel. It's where we look to real parties in interest to carry the burden is when the judge or the judicial branch has absolutely no interest in the proceeding other than the fact that it was brought based on a ruling from the bench by the judge in his or her official capacity. So when the issues are only of interest to the underlying party, the real party in interest, those are the situations in which we look to their counsel to provide or to play the role that otherwise we'd have the Attorney General or outside counsel play if, in fact, there's a judicial interest involved. So if it's, for example, in a civil case where a ruling that a trial judge has made has been brought up on mandamus, and it's purely a matter of interest to the parties in the case, and the judge just simply made a ruling in his official capacity, we don't find it inappropriate to have the real party in interest defend the ruling in that case. But if there's any kind of a judge or judicial branch interest, we don't allow that to happen.
That's helpful. I'm not sure I'm right there yet, but I think you've said probably all that could be said to clarify that. And for the record, I appreciate your comments.
Thank you. We have Senator Grinsky, are you moving Senate Bill 288-5?
Yes. Well, have we already moved the amendment? Yes, we have. I'm moving Senate Bill 288-5 as amended.
Yes, and we have already, we've rescinded the other amendments that we adopted before, so you're yes. Going to. Are there objections to Senator Grinsky's motion to adopt Dash 5 amendments dated 5-189?
Okay.
Hearing none, so ordered.
So now I guess I'm moving.
Yes.
Senate Bill 288 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Grinsky has moved Senate Bill 288 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Further discussion? Call the roll, please, Kiska.
Aye.
Brockman?
Aye.
Grinsky?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Shoemaker?
Springer? No.
Motion carried. Thank you. Okay, now we have 1, 2, 3 bills that are Catherine's, 520, 522, and 627, which I would like to leave till we get two more members up from wherever they are.
Are they on their way?
Well, I hope they're on their way. At least one, yeah, we need one.
You say 5:22?
5:20. Actually, we could go ahead with 5:20, couldn't we?
This is Chumaker.
Catherine, I'm sorry, 5:20. Let's just go ahead then. We're perched with 5:20.
Okay, I'll pick you a second.
Do we have the people, we have the interested parties here from 5:20?
Couple of them.
I know this is a...
5:20 now.
We have two sets of amendments, at least. This has to do with utility trouble damages.
Who's amendment is dash two?
The dash two amendments are from the telecommunications and the sponsors. Yeah, I want to do those and I'll do these. And the others are from the PUC. So the LC ones are from the PUC, the non-LC, I'm sorry, backwards. 520-2 LC is from the telecommunications people. And the other one is from the public utilities.
It lists. So let's go through the sponsors of the bill. We have someone here from the telecommunications. If you identify yourself for the record and go through your dash two amendments, that would be helpful.
Chairperson Cohen, my name is Larry Huss. I represent U.S. West Communications in this matter. The purpose of the bill, as the committee is probably aware, is to try and set a standard for conduct or for recovery of damages to telecommunications utilities that is comparable to the general business community in a period of time in which the telecommunications business is evolving towards a competitive market. We think it's appropriate that we be treated like other businesses. The intent here is to eliminate the statutory treble damages that is currently in the law under Senate Bill 7561, or I mean, under ORS 756185, and is incorporated in the about to become law Chapter 447 under Section 86. And in those two acts, the court is obligated to award treble damages upon a demonstration of gross negligence or willful misconduct. There are two sets of amendments that are proposed. I believe that SB 520-1 is the amendment prepared by Senator Springer, and that simply repeals what will become Section 86 of Chapter 447, which is the treble damages statute as applies to telecommunications utilities only. It will leave the 756185, as that may apply to other utilities, in place, and we will only deal with the telecommunications utilities. Quite frankly, that is acceptable to us, and we support the Senator in his efforts on that. We have also SB 520-2, which is a little more surgical attempt at dealing with this, and the purpose in this one is to eliminate the reference to telecommunications utilities in Senate or in Section 756185 and create a new section in the Chapter 447, which will, in effect, permit damages to be awarded if the telecommunications utility violates an act or order of the Commission. And that is the language that we have proposed, and I think that the committee administrator has worked over for us.
Can I interrupt you? The operative language that you're talking about is in Section 4, page 2 of the Dash 2 amendments. Is that right?
Yes, Senator. That would be the language which would now be applicable to telecommunications utilities. And in this regard, there would be a cause of action against the telecommunications utility for the violation of these statutes, the common law requirements as regard to punitive damages would apply, and as my understanding of the law is that if a party is able to demonstrate gross negligence, and the gross negligence is such that it is in some fashion or other violative of societal mores, then they can recover punitive damages, or if they can demonstrate that there is willful misconduct, they can recover punitive damages. That is the standard that is applied to business generally. That is the standard we think is appropriate to be applied to the telecommunications utilities.
So you still have a reach to punitive damages? The court has.
The court can still reach punitive damages upon the same demonstration as they would for general business.
Any questions?
Where does the, Madam Chair, where does the punitive damage provision appear within the Dash 2 amendments?
It doesn't. It's part of the section. It's part of the other otherwise law.
All right.
The damage is a fixed. You'll see it really, I guess it's that Section 4, which talks about awarding of damages, the ability to award damages, which would also include
punitive damages.
Punitive when they apply. So, Springer.
I really appreciate the willingness of the company to work with my office on these amendments. I guess we're going to hear from the PUC and see whether or not they're still out of their comfort zone here. I have another question that's related to what I understand may be a House bill, and I don't know if either of our witnesses here can speak to that issue, but either existing law or a proposed law would allow a utility, someone in place of U.S. West, I understand, to recover treble damages themselves if they're the plaintiff, if another party is responsible for damages to the utility.
Mr. Senator Springer, that's coming to this committee momentarily.
It is.
In fact, it may already be here.
Okay.
Came out of Senator Hill's committee.
You have me unaware, too, Senator.
You're off the hook. Okay. Thank you. I didn't mean
to. And it's primarily, I would say, in fact, in all due honesty, it has been, it is a bill that's drafted by the PUD Association, and I did give the U.S. West person a bad time when they testified to the other committee, but that bill will be here for our review.
And I hope that person shows up here to testify again instead of me, Senator.
Okay. Yes, Senator, that answered your question.
Thank you. Thank you.
Senator Schumacher, you have a question?
No.
Anyone else? Thank you. Let's move on to the PUC.
Thank you. I'm Paul Graham with the Oregon Department of Justice, representing the PUC. Now, the PUC submitted a letter dated April 20, 1989, roughly a page and a half, sets forth the PUC's position, which I'll summarize in brief.
Let's just get to your amendments.
Okay. All the amendments do would be to remove the automatic trebling feature. The existing law says that if there are punitive damages, they're to be trebled the amount of the consequential damages. So if your damages are $10,000, there's an automatic trebling of that $10,000 to $30,000. What the PUC amendments would do would be to remove the automatic trebling feature so that the amount of punitive damages would be determined by the judge in a court trial, by the jury, in a jury trial case.
But you're assuming in all cases there would be punitives, and that I see it as you're drafting here, you've clearly talking about punitives.
There would be punitive damages only if the plaintiff was able to show one of two things, either gross negligence or willful misconduct. That's what existing law says. So we'd be keeping existing law with respect to the standard, and the dispute between the two parties is over the standard. Under existing law, a plaintiff needs to show either gross negligence or willful and wanton misconduct. Under the U.S. West amendments or under Senator Springer's amendments, a litigant would be required to show willful and wanton misconduct. Gross negligence would not be enough to justify an award of punitive damages.
I don't understand that. It's on line 15. It says you still have gross negligence in there.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. You still have gross negligence in there under the PUC amendments. Under their amendments, Under U.S. West amendments, you don't have gross negligence. What you have is willful and wanton misconduct. So the difference is the PUC says you get punitives if you show either gross negligence or willful and wanton misconduct. Under the other sets of amendments, you have to show willful and wanton misconduct to get punitive damages. Gross negligence doesn't cut it. That's the dispute.
Madam Chair, perhaps you could articulate why it's appropriate to impose punitive damages, that is a punishment for even gross negligence, which is a mistake, although a gross mistake. What is the rationale for punishment in that circumstance?
Well, the Commission's rationale is that if you're a customer of a utility, you're not like the customer of a private business. You're a captive customer. You're stuck. The letter that the Commission submitted on April 20th, last paragraph of the first page of that letter explains in brief the Commission's reasons. Let me walk you through that for just a sec.
Okay.
In fact, I can read
it
to you.
We don't really
have time for that. We have read the letter.
Well, I haven't.
Oh, okay. Sorry, it's in here.
It's very short.
Okay.
It's about three sentences. You can read that paragraph and the following paragraph on page 2. Read those two paragraphs, and that'll give you the capsule summary of the Commission's argument.
Okay. I'll read those.
Are there questions of either of the folks?
Yes.
Senator Hill.
Very briefly, what type of trouble have you had? What type of things have they engaged in? How often has this treble damage procedure been used?
Not all that often. I can think of about three cases, and they have all involved telecommunications utilities. I can't think of any case that involved an energy utility. And typically what is involved is overcharges or inadequate service. The service that's required by the tariffs is not provided. One of those two things.
Three, Madam Chair. Over what period of time?
I would say probably in the last 10 or 15 years. There have probably been about three of these cases.
They brought by the PUC or by private parties?
No, they have to be brought by private parties in circuit court. In fact, the PUC cannot bring this action. This is an action that's brought by a private individual. Typically, the private individual would be overcharged, would have to pay X number of dollars more than the tariff said that he or she was supposed to pay. And if that person were able to show that the overcharge was a result of gross negligence or willful misconduct, then that person would be entitled to recover punitive damages in addition to consequential damages.
Senator?
What's the amounts that we're talking about in those cases?
It can be substantial. There's a case that the Commission discusses in its letter where I think the amount was about $100,000, and it was trebled to $300,000, or it might have been more than that, but it was a large amount of money. It was not 100 or 200 bucks. I think we were talking about six figures.
And just one final, Madam Chair, and I'll... Yes. Give me the overall picture of the types of actions that have to be taken against the telecommunications industry. I mean, what's their general track record as far as as abusing consumers or whatever?
You mean it's charging far more than the tariffs require?
No, I mean just what type of record do they have? I mean, are they a lot of trouble to you?
If you're talking about the trouble that we're dealing with in this type of bill, they have probably not been a lot of trouble to the Commission, because if they get sued for charging more than their tariffs, then they're violating the law. And they'd be pretty foolish to violate the law. So usually, if they violate the law, they do so inadvertently. And that's why we've had so few cases under this statute. If they violate the law in a gross manner or willfully and wantonly, then they get nailed. They rarely do that. They're rarely that foolish.
Senator Brockman, then Senator Springer.
He basically covered the three misuses or violations or whatever you call them. What were the results of all three of them? Say one ended up in a fine of $100,000 that was trebled. What happened to the other two?
I can't remember.
Senator, if I may, I think the most recent one was the Fisher Motor case, and at the time of the appeal of that and the eventual settlement of the case, the judgment was over $2.1 million.
In one of the other cases, I think it's the McPherson case, it was six figures. I can't recall. And the other one, I don't think ever went to the appellate court. But I can't recall the exact amounts, but they were substantial.
I remember last session, I read the briefs from the Fisher case, so I and had a chance to talk to the counsel representing Fisher, so I'm somewhat familiar with that case. But I believe your letter indicates that given the reorganization of U.S. West, that basically those circumstances could not reasonably be expected to occur again, given the way U.S. West and its subsidiaries now do business. Am I interpreting that correctly?
That's correct. That's dealt with on the second page, second to last paragraph of the letter. That's true. They could no longer sell the type of equipment that they sold to Fisher, so they couldn't get in that bind again.
Another question, just so I understand the distinction here, you know, if I get a bill that says I owe $1 million for a month's telephone service, you know, it's obviously a computer error. That doesn't give rise to the cause of action here, but if, say, they were to turn that over to a collection agency and they started going after me, is that where we start getting closer to intentional and gross?
That's right. In your example, it would obviously be a computer error. If you called them and told them it was a computer error, and they ignored you and called a collection agency on you, and you told the collection agency and told the company to stop, and they kept on coming after you, then you might be in a situation where you'd be able to recover punitive damages upon a showing of gross negligence or willful and wanton misconduct.
Thank you.
Senator Hill?
Then, Paul, I have to ask you then, why do you feel so strongly about, given the few things and trying, they're in trouble all the time here, so I want to know precisely why you feel it's important to retain this.
Well, there have been a few cases in the past, and the Commission feels that if another one arises, and it may not involve U.S. West, it may involve any utility, that given the enhanced position of the utilities, given their monopoly position, that if they behave with gross negligence as opposed to simple negligence, that they should be subject to an award of punitive damages. Now, the amendments that the Commission drafted would do away with the automatic trebling. A ratepayer would not be able to come in and say, I was treated very badly, the utility behaved with gross negligence, and my damages get trebled. The ratepayer would be required to show what the appropriate level of damages would be, and that would be determined by the judge or the jury. There'd be no automatic trebling anymore.
Senator, if I may respond further to that, U.S. West is in a position where we are part fish and part fowl. We are no longer a strict monopoly. There are services that we provide that are subject to competition. Virtually every service we provide, some one person out in Oregon has an alternative to that service. Even residential service they have an alternative to through the use of shared tenant facilities. You can go from that extreme all the way up to toll, which is a very competitive industry. So to suggest that we are the old monopoly that requires this kind of legislation is inappropriate. We are in an evolutionary stage, and what we would hope is that the Commission would, or that the legislature would recognize this evolutionary stage and put us in the position of responding in terms of damages as if any other business would act in our stead. And I have to tell you that there are already sufficient additional incentives present in the law that would incent us not to violate the terms of the statute, not the least of which are, one, the Commission can seek an injunction against us from further violations of it, and two, if there is a violation determined and we continue to violate it, there are civil penalties to be assessed against us. In addition to any damages that might be awarded to the individual, the Commission can assess damages against us of, I think, up to $10,000 for each occurrence, and each occurrence probably is each new day we fail to conform to the Commission's order. So this is putting not only icing but sprinkles, chocolate, and cherries on the cake.
Well, let me respond to that.
No.
Okay. I'd like to hear from U.S. West regarding the compromise proposed by the PUC, that is to not make any trebling automatic, but to leave it to the judge's discretion to decide what is an appropriate punishment given the circumstances of the crime, if you will.
Okay. Quite frankly, Senator Shoemaker, I believe that puts us in a worse situation than we find ourselves in today. Punitive damages are generally measured by the economic worth of the offender as opposed to measured against the damages actually incurred. The trebling is a measure against damages actually incurred, and if you only recover $2,000, trebled, it's only $6,000. Under a general punitive damages award, if you could recover $2,000 in general damages and you could record $20 million in punitive damage, because the measure is how much will it take to teach us not to do that act again. And when you're a very large corporation like U.S. West Communications, that figure can become astronomical. Now, the reason that I say that is because you have created a standard here in this statute, as proposed by the PUC, that is unlike the rest of the business community, and that is that simple gross negligence without the other factors of conduct offensive to societal mores is sufficient to invoke the punitive damages. So I think we are worse off than we are under the current statutes.
Let me ask PUC representative whether it was your intent that the PUC then could actually increase the level of punitives.
No, it was our understanding that U.S. West itself wanted to do away with the automatic trebling feature, and that's why the PUC agreed to it. U.S. West said it wanted to leave the matter to the judge or the jury, and the PUC said, that's okay. If you want it, we'll go along with it. The PUC doesn't have any...